Chapter 6, Pinch. Big Pinch got in trouble, and Omakayas was glad. Here's how it happened. One day, Mama found a bush of late-bearing chococherries. They were plump and so ripe that they had turned a deep blackish-purple color. She picked until her fingers turned red-black at the tips. When she returned, bearing her load of berries, Mama's eyes lit on Big Pinch. "I have a job for you," she said. His eyes got beady and his lip turned out. He pouted at her, but she paid his lowered looks no mind. "I'm spreading these berries on the bark sheaves so they will dry," she went on, and then she proceeded to spread out the berries on clean birch bark in the warmest patch of sun she could find. "You watch them carefully now, Big Pinch. Keep the birds away. Listen, my son." Mama narrowed her eyes at Pinch so that he would know he was trusted with an important task. "This is our winter seasoning and food. You'll be glad of them when we are hungry in Little Spirit Moon." She gave Big Pinch a long, ferny branch to wave and made him sit next to the berries. Then she turned her back on him and went out to the lake with Grandma to check their fish nets. She took Neewa along with her, put him carefully in his tinkin gun, petted and kissed him. Angeline and Omakayas were sent to town. They were to sweep out and prepare the family cabin for the winter move. Big Pinch was left alone. It was hard being Big Pinch, harder than his sisters would ever know. They didn't understand how good it felt to fill a stomach that so rarely got full. They didn't realize how good it felt to shove handfuls of berries into his greedy mouth. Pinch looked at the berries. Bored, he shooed away a few small chickadees. Andeg sat with him on a low branch, but Andeg knew better than to eat the berries. If only, thought Pinch sadly, those berries didn't look so delicious. Mama had found a patch of chocoberries that were much more luscious than most. These were the biggest, fattest berries Pinch had ever seen. It didn't seem as though it would hurt to eat a few. Pinch sneaked one, then a few more, then a handful. Andeg cawed 3 times. "Ka-ka! Ka-ka! Ka-ka!" and seemed to disapprove. Pinch made a face at the bird. The berries tasted so good as they looked better. Richer, blacker, without that mouth-puckering chococherry taste. He might just have another handful. Well, he thought not long after he finished that bunch, a handful more would not hurt. And then, just to balance the look of the berries, he took more from one side. The other, he spread the berries out, and then the bark looked full again. Pinch waited. The sun blossomed slowly, so slowly, and it took such a long time to dry the berries. Pinch tried to amuse himself, but with nobody there to bother, he was at a loss. Andeg didn't want to play and flew out of reach. There was nobody to annoy except himself. Another handful. Another and another. Pinch rearranged the berries once again. Now there seemed to be plenty of berries on the bark. They were well spaced, it was true, but the bark sheaves looked full. He kept nibbling, spacing, arranging, and rearranging until sleep overcame him, and he curled up tight and nodded away. "Pinch!" It was Mama's threatening voice. She was standing tall over the berries, and she wasn't the least bit fooled by Pinch's berry arrangement. "What happened? Where are the berries I picked, you sleepy boy?" Pinch woke, jumped up, rubbing his eyes, blinking. It was true. There were very few berries on the bark sheaves. Had he eaten so many? How could he? Big Pinch was horrified, embarrassed at himself. "Pinch!" Mom was using her very angry voice now, and Pinch felt so terrible that his brain raced, and he seized suddenly upon a blaming lie. "Andeg ate them! Bad Andeg!" Pinch pointed up, and sure enough, Andeg, sitting out of reach on a high branch, certainly looked guilty as he glared down and preened his new growth of feathers. Mama, furious that her work was all for nothing, shook her fist in the air and called out to Andeg, "Come on down and eat the rest of them." and dig, not understanding, hopped Mr. down Davis, to nearly within her reach and cocked his head in a friendly way as though to inquire, "Are you sure?" "Ah!" Mama took Andag's friendliness as a sign that he really had eaten up the berries. Mama grabbed a stick, shook it hard. Andag croaked in alarm. Without a shout, she threw back her arm, took sudden aim at the bird, and hurled the stick at Andag. "Caw!" Andag was hit, although not seriously hurt. He jumped fearfully from branch to branch and fluttered out of reach. Then farther, farther away until he was lost from view. "See what you made me do?" Mama called, but immediately she sat down, sorry, knowing that the fault lay strictly with herself. "I must get the better of myself. I must. She shook her head. "How could I?" Now her daughter's pet was frightened, and even if he had eaten all of the berries she worked so hard to pick, Mama loved the crow and never meant to scare him. How betrayed by humans the bird must feel, she thought guiltily. And here she had trained him to eat from her hand. Now he was frightened off. "Come back," she called hopefully into the woods. "Ombe!" But the bird, still crying out in confusion, only fled deeper into the woods. Mama sat down sadly, ashamed of herself. That was how Omakias found her mother when she returned from her town errand. Mama told her what had happened, how Andag had eaten the berries. Pinch was watching, and how she had gotten angry, frightened Andag off, and how she was now sorry to have done so, and would help Omakias find the bird. "Surely he will come to you," said Mama, just as she was explaining why it was she had lost her temper, and how hard she had worked to find those berries. Big Pinch groaned. "What's wrong?" Mama asked. "Oh!" Big Pinch lay down, holding his stomach. "It hurts! Oh, it hurts!" Sigh. Mama bent over her boy, inspecting him. "A stomach ache, She was immediately suspicious. Gently but firmly, she took his hands in hers, uncurled them, saw the telltale juice marks of bruised chuckberries that darkened his fingertips. Then the pitiful berry-stained smile that sealed his guilt. "Pinch!" she said, and this time her voice was worse than angry. It was disappointed. "You lied! The ghost foot carries off liars in the night. As for your stomach ache, there is no medicine but enduring the consequences of your greed. You'll have to suffer, Pinch. Maybe this will teach you." With that, she and Omakias left him to Angeline and went off into the woods seeking Andag. Not far into the woods, they heard Andag's distinctive croak. "Croak-caw! Croak-caw! Croak-caw!" "There," said Mama, pointing. "You go to him, Omakias. He doesn't trust me, and I don't blame him." She gave Omakias a crust of bread, a treat, and sent her ahead. Although she stayed within sight, should Omakias need her. And something happened. Sure enough, that made Mama glad she stayed close, though she couldn't have explained it if she tried. Far ahead, she heard branches cracking, and a sound she knew well, a low chuffing. Bears. High in the oak trees, stuffing themselves with acorns, the tubby young bears moved along the thinnest branches. More crashing. Now a squeal. One of the bears ventured out too far, curious, and tumbled right out of the tree. He picked himself up and stood on his hind legs, his acorn chubby belly stuck out like La Patros. Then Mama saw both little bears loping and bounding through the woods toward Omakias. "Daughter!" she shouted. Bears are shy, and these wouldn't seek Omakias out to attack, surely. On the other hand, they could be dangerous, especially if wounded or angered. Mama ran toward Omakias, but then stopped, afraid to disturb what took place. The two young bears bounded curiously toward her daughter. She saw Omakias turn sharply to the bears, and then, after a moment of surprise, Omakias greeted the animals. She stood quietly before them, and she was smiling. Mama was further surprised and frightened when, without a sound of warning, a huge sow bear fattened for winter, rambled out of the brush and passed Omakias without acknowledging her, a human, as the least bit strange or out of place. And the younger bears, was she talking to them? Mama couldn't see. She crept nearer and listened to what her daughter said. Ahin Neshema, she said to the nearest one, you've gotten fat. She smiled at the bumbling, chubby bodies. They were huge. Over the summer, they had grown until they outweighed her by a great deal. Though they still were bashful and hung back, just beyond the reach of her fingertips as she spoke to them. So you're getting ready to sleep, she said, offering the Bangkok pieces. Here, my brothers, sleep well. The bears stood before her, testing the air, the unfamiliar smell of the Bangkok, and then each one bent to the bit of bread she held, flicked it up with a muscular tongue, and loped off into the woods behind their mother, who was clearly just a little tired of them following her along, and grumpy because she wanted to sleep. And Deg returned that evening to sit just outside the circle of the outdoor cooking fire. He hopped a little closer when Omakias tempted him with a bit of stew meat. He never did trust Mama again, though, never did perch near and watch her at work, tipping his head side to side as though he were learning her actions. He still warned her of all approaching animals or strangers, but he was wary of her ever after she lost her temper and kept his distance, which made her sad. Andag did, however, perform a great service in the winter cabin. While Omakias dragged kettle after kettle of mud to the side of the cabin and, along with Angeline, chinked the cracks that had opened during hot weather, Andag hunted. His vigilance and hatred for mice helped the whole family in their efforts to ready the cabin for winter. He chased mice, tried to pounce on them, swept them away with his wings, even caught a few and pecked them sharply as though to warn them. And they never did come back. They sought other cabins and wigwams where there was not frightful crow to bother them. Now was time to harvest the wild rice that grew across from the island in the great sloughs of Kakongan, where Mama's brother and one of her sisters lived. It was a part of the year everyone looked forward to because there would be cousins to play with, games in the rice camps, the pleasures of talk, feasting, more talk, more visiting and feasting. Early in the morning then they all set out in the canoe they had worked on a year ago. It was beautifully made, light and strong, carefully waterproofed with pitch by Grandma, who kept it in good repair, and its own house by the side of the lake. They all got in, Mom in the back to paddle and steer, Grandma up front taking turns with Angeline, who held Niwu in his cradle board. They all fit into the canoe with plenty of room to spare. That space, they hoped, they would fill with the wild rice, the manamen, the good seed that would sustain them through the winter. Omakias envied her big sister. She wanted to hold and play with her smiling baby brother. Niwu had a second tooth and seemed even prouder of it than the first. Omakias had saved a bit of hard bannock bread for him to chew on, and she put it in his mouth. Niwu never even bit her. Omakias put her finger to his cheek, stroked it softly. Why, oh why, did she have to take care of Big Pinch? She sighed and turned to him. She was in charge of Pinch, or he was in charge of her. She wasn't sure which, because it was one of his mischief days when nothing she could do would satisfy him. Andeg, perched on Omakias's shoulder, was settled in for the long ride and sympathetic to Omakias. He knew that Pinch had something to do with the bad day. Mama had lost her temper. Before they started out, Grandma gave her tobacco to the water and asked for a safe, smooth crossing. The sun was mild and the waves low, the wind fresh but still warm, and things would have gone perfectly if Pinch hadn't teased Andeg. But he did. Every time he thought no one was looking, he tried to pull a feather out of Andeg's tail. Gago Pinch, said Omakias. Gago Pinch, said Angeline. Gago Pinch, said Mama when he tried again. Gago Pinch, said Grandma wearily. Gago Pinch, said Omakias again. They must have said it more times as they traveled the lake than there were waves or fish alongside of them. They said it so many times They didn't hear themselves anymore. Stop it, Pinch. Giggle, Pinch. Stop it. Stop. Same as when they said it on shore. Pinch didn't hear it. He just kept trying to pull a feather. Finally, Pinch got a hold of the black tip of Andeg's pride and joy, his tail. Giggle, Pinch! Everyone gasped. This time, it was Andeg who spoke. Terrified at the crow's harsh croak, Pinch nearly threw himself out of the canoe, nearly tipped them all over in his panic to get to Mama, who yelled, of course, Giggle, Pinch! Causing Andeg to flap his wings and say again, Giggle, Pinch, which made Pinch cry, an embarrassment he never quite got over. From then on, he regarded Andeg with stubborn awe, treated the bird with reserved respect, and in fact, behaved just a little better for just a little while, as Nokomis told him that his rascal ways annoyed even the animals. Wait until you heard what Mukwa the bear says, or Grandfather Owl. Think of that, Nokomis scolded. Pinch didn't want to. When they reached the river's entrance and paddled toward the rice camp, Grandma noted with disappointment the thinness of the rice stalks. Too much standing water in the spring had caused them to grow too quickly. Some of the rice heads drooped right over into the water. She frowned. The season would be a poor one, unless the water in the other rice beds had been lower. They reached the shores of the camp, and there, amid the general happiness at seeing one another, the grown-ups learned the rice was indeed sparse that year. This was not good news, but the children could not have cared less. Nothing ruined their fun. Immediately, Omakais raced off, her crow flapping alongside her, to find her cousins and introduce them to her friend, Andeg. There, under the tree, she saw Wishkob's daughters, Little Bee and Twilight, and her cousins, including Tata, a thin and quiet boy, just a little younger than Omakias. He was the son of her mother's brother, Akowenzi. As soon as Omakias saw Tata, an itchy, joking mood always came upon her, and she looked around to see what tricks she could play on her quiet cousin. His older brothers were rough and ran wild, and he had a sister known as a strong, swift runner. Her name was Two-Strike Girl, and she was better than most boys at hunting and fighting. She had to be forced to do the things girls normally do, and her mother and grandma had finally given up on her. I'm dancing the rice this year, Two-Strike told Omakias right off. That was most often the boy's job, but she had persuaded the rice chief she could do it. Early the next morning, the rice boss blessed the harvest, and Mama set out with Auntie Muskrat, who pulled in back while Mama used her rice sticks to bend the stalks toward her and knock the rice grains off into the bottom of the boat. This year, although the harvest was not the best, there was rice for everyone, and as always, work that could not be avoided. Omakias grumbled when Grandma asked her to go pick reeds. Take Two-Strike Girl with you, she ordered. Pick enough for two mats. So Omakias and her cousin went to the side of the slough where the flattest reeds grew and used their knives to slice them off below the waterline, bunch after bunch, until they had great bundles that they carried back to camp on their shoulders. Here, said Two-Strike Girl, dumping hers off. She gathered herself to spring away, but Grandma caught her. Stay, ordered Grandma. Help your cousin weave. Two-Strike Girl looked alarmed and then horrified at the idea of doing girls' work. Still, because she was ordered to do it by Grandma, she sat down beside Omakias and began to weave the reeds into strong, simple mats that they would use to smoke the rice. Even now, the great fire Mama had prepared was burning down to its embers, and as the girl's fingers moved unwillingly, Pinch was just as unwillingly gathering up rotten old pieces of maple wood to use in smoking the rice. When he had gathered several sagging piles of the crumbly maple oak, and when the mats were finished, Omakias's regular and straight in its weave, and Two-Strike Girl's crooked and gaping, Mama took the mats and set them over the smoking maple fire. Then on top of the mats, she poured the rice, which began, after the mat was properly heated, to give off a most delicate, nutty aroma. Using a rake made from a stick of red willow, pulled up by the roots. The two girls took turns turning the rice over and over, smoking and toasting the grains. As the rice cooked, it gathered the taste of the maple. "I can't take this anymore," cried Two Strike Girl, throwing the stick down. "If I have to work, at least I'm going to have some fun of it." Running over to the bark-lined pit in the ground, she jumped in and began treading rice with a frantic pace that made everyone around her laugh. It was the sight of the impatient Two-Strike Girl dancing the rice that Omakias would remember long after. In the deep winter of the year, her face was flushed and thrilled with effort. She was tireless. All day and the next, Two-Strike's legs moved up and down. Her feet, in clean new moccasins, crushed the tough holes. She never stopped. And all the time, her eyes were shining, her white teeth set in a huge grin. Andag danced up and down with her on a limb above. "Come help me," she called to Omakias. Jumping to help her cousin, Omakias felt as proud and bold. The two held hands and stepped high, day after day, night after night. Although the family did not return with as much rice as they needed, Omakias and Two-Strike Girl became such good friends that ever after, they called each other sister.